cricket isn't having low body fat percentage, a wonderful BMI, a tight rig, huge biceps, and a woman to call your own. Oh wait, yes it is.
Cricket isn't being blessed with wonderful hand-eye coordination, a muscular-toned body and a stable family life. It's putting the nets up before training and not being rewarded for it at all, or doing exactly the same thing with subs and not going up the grades for it at all. You look at your club presentation night and you'll think, I did all of these things, but really, you only get rewarded if you're good at cricket.
Cricket isn't a family-friendly activity for all to enjoy. It's the fact that according to ABS data, 66% of marriages involving cricketers will end within 10 years, a more than twofold increase on the national average. Yet despite the very real danger to your personal relationships, you will continue to spend your entire weekend on a cricket field chasing a long dead dream alongside 10 rare units who vary wildly in terms of their personality disorders and marriage statuses. Meanwhile, your young family sits at home on Saturday night wondering if daddy's out on the circuit again.
The Great Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a great cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the Great Cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible, at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grey Cricketer podcast on Fox Sports. My name is Ian Higgins. What a wonderful show we have for you today. Richard Hines, respected journalist. Richard Hines is on the show.
One of the greats.
One of the greats. It's going to be fantastic. That's the voice of Sam Perry. He's here with me today. Sam, welcome. Unfortunately, Dave isn't here.
That's right. I guess I was jumping in early because it feels like a very bare room without Dave in his allotted corner. I don't know if you've seen Wayne's World, he goes, but there's something about, you know, when Garth has to do the show on his own and and the camera just zooms in on him and he's like, party on, Wayne. There's two of us, though. I'm sure we can carry it, but let's see if we can kind of insert some dark musings of our own. Salute to you, Dave, over there in Singapore. Sorry you couldn't be with us.
He's doing some filing for us in Singapore, and by that, I mean, he's got a job and he's doing his job over there. Mm. Sam, big show today. Mm-hmm. I mean, when is it not a big show?
No, but it does feel full because all formats are still represented. We had a glorified club presentation night in the Alan Border Medal, which requires major discussion, red carpet and whatnot, wags, who wore what, especially. Strange haircuts, men resplendent in suits, beaming. Nevertheless, also, and Richard Hines, I'm really looking forward to speaking to Richard Hines, not least because I want to say from the top of the show, it was actually him who, you know, who is responsible really for this podcast. He seeded the idea and provided us with the connections and whatnot to push this forward. So we're really happy to have him on the show. Looking forward to it.
Richard Hines is the great cricketer, is what I think you said. I'm not sure I tuned out there for a bit. Sam, as I said before, but there's many things to talk about. Of course, the ODIs, they're sort of still going on. Like, they've sort of finished, but there's more.
I like that you're leading off the show with ODIs. And we're looking at our agenda here as well. Does that say something about our view on the state of cricket? Here goes that we're starting with international cricket still. A lot of people would say that it's probably the least most important thing in cricket going on.
Yeah, well, that's definitely true. But, I mean, what's the biggest thing? Is BBL the biggest thing?
I don't know.
I don't know our
audience. It's all in flux.
I don't know our audience. I just look at numbers, and I always have.
India. What's, yeah, that's right. I'm just a numbers man.
I'm just a number. It's just like any sort of Chop King.
Exactly.
It's not about quality. It's about quantity. I've always said that.
You just anointed yourself a Chop King?
I mean, I didn't, but you just did, so cheers. I mean, we're speaking about that, mate. Obviously, the Alan Border Medal.
60 now.
Obviously, the Alan Border Medal is a thing we need to talk about. I mean, there was so much in the Alan Border Medal. I'm really looking forward to getting into that with you.
Yes.
The BBL finals. But obviously, I mean, the actual cricket of the BBL aside, there's a lot going on with, like, match fixing. And Darren Lehman being on Twitter.
I mean,
that's fascinating as well. And then, of course, Sam, my favourite time of the week is hashtag IceTGC.
It's getting, voluminous. We're getting a lot of people writing in now. And people wanting us to sell our page as well, which is quite funny.
Yeah, a chap offered us $10,000 to sell the page, and we asked, what about the fans? And he said, don't worry about them. Legit.
So let us know what you think about that. Are you happy for us to sell the page in what is obviously a scam operation? The bloke would not send us a picture of him nor tell us whom he worked for, but I'm sure it's all legit.
But he was desperate to add us as friends, because like any good business. It's like LinkedIn. Anyway, ODIs. I mean, where to start? Let's talk about Pakistan's fielding.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, there's a certain stereotype with subcontinental cricketers, and they really fulfilled that stereotype by just. Well, Mickey Arthur said that Australia were 50 runs better in the field than Pakistan. 50 runs in professional cricket.
Wow.
Why are they so bad?
It's, you know what's interesting about it? Like, I mean, we could peddle stereotypes all day. A few things to say about Pakistan fielding. One, I still find it kind of charming. Maybe that's the most condescending I could be.
Sure,
but I still think there's something cool, like rock and roll, about playing international cricket and having players that can dominate some of the best in the world. Like, I love watching Muhammad Amir bowl, and some of the guys can be destructive with the bat. Not too many these days at the moment, but particularly with the ball, I find Pakistan to be very compelling. But I like that you can just get to that level and be so poor at fielding. I mean, honestly, it is lower than some of the middle grade sides from people who will be listening to this show at the moment. And what's also interesting, finally, it's actually not final at all, but we commemorated the 87 World Cup team this week.
Yeah.
And they were very well known for lifting the majorly lifting the bar in fielding through the coaching of Bob Simpson. I've always found fielding, you know, it's more and more important. We understand it's important, but it's boring. It can be exciting, but it's boring. And I think that helps underline Pakistan's identity as an exciting, mercurial side.
I think I know that India is not the same country as Pakistan. In fact, they're from a different entire...
It's always a good place to start.
Entire border situation, you know. Let's not even get started on Kashmir. until about Yuvraj Singh, India, they just wanted to have a stick and go home. That's all they wanted. Just have a hit.
Have a stick and go.
That's all they wanted. That's all they wanted. But then Yuvraj Singh was the first one who brought like high level intensity fielding. He was very good in the field. Now, like Virat Kohli is like a wonderful cricketer in general, but they're all pretty athletic these days. But Pakistan has still lost in the 90s in many respects. I mean, their batting is still very 1990s. This whole one day series has been like 270 chasing, apart from the last game when Australia hit 430.
So, first things I'm taking out of your comments there is the great cricketer's Asian strategy is over. Right? You know, for those listening out there, one thing on the contrary with Indian fielding is that they lay claim to the greatest ever close-in fielder of all time. A chap you wouldn't have heard of, Eknath Sulkar. Yeah, it sounds like a guy for video game.
Eckies.
Yes.
To his mates.
But in the, I think, I'm going to say 50s and 60s, he was renowned for being this most wonderful close-in catcher.
Really?
Particularly at home when a lot of catches do come your way. So I just want to shout out to our Asian friends, if you're willing to invest in our page or you know, want us to sell it to you as well for more than Brett Smith, inverted commas, we bow down to Eknath. But I think beyond that, you're right, he goes. And it is quite frustrating to see, you know, what do they say? Fielding is a window into your soul, into a team's soul. So Pakistan are basically rock and roll and don't care about hard stuff.
I've literally never heard that expression before. Mm. But I mean, what else can we take away? I mean, Dave Warner hit his 19th 100 in December in one day, so that was good. But also, there's something about Glenn Maxwell's 78 in that last ODI, which was quite refreshing to see, because he is very good to watch, isn't he?
He's good to watch.
360.
I mean, he is the... he's like the missing key in that whole Australia.
Evolution.
I mean, I'm talking
Lincoln evolution.
In like, yeah, that's right, in Australian cricket evolution. In their test evolution, I think, though. I mean, look, Maxwell's the guy that's just, he's just so obviously the fit for that missing number six player.
Totally.
But, you know, there's questions over how well he gets on with or how well other people like him,
Shit,
you know,
like
as
policy,
a bloke. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. And that's one thing I've learned about cricket in Australia, you know, and I don't want to use the C word, which is a huge and important word in the lexicon of Cricket Australia, but like, it's important, you know, everyone knows that everyone in cricket is a C, but it's, you've got to be the right kind.
Clearly, Maxwell's the wrong kind
of bloke for that side at the moment. But I'm happy to see him score runs because he's got a lot of skill. He bowls, and I like seeing, you know, bad blokes do well.
I mean, if I want to go...
Hang on, he's not a bad bloke.
Can I take this on a bit of a tangent? I mean, just speaking about shit blokes, and I don't want to get too down on, you know, the Australian public too early in the podcast. I mean, we're only about 7 minutes in. Still here
I like it, yeah. 7 minutes in. Speaking of shit blokes.
But here we are. I was watching the tennis, and it was the round of 16 match. Federer was serving for the match against Kai Nishikori.
Yes.
And it was a really good match. Kai Nishikori is actually 8th in the world, which was really fifth in the world. It was really surprising. Anyway, it was a great match. And Federer is doing the ball toss as he was serving for match point, and someone from the crowd yelled out, "Nice, Gary!" And I've had enough, Sam. I've had enough.
Yeah.
I never liked Nice Gary.
You're out
I don't
of your
like
chair.
It now. I hate it so much. It's the worst thing. I don't like when people yell out in mid-tennis, what's the point anyway of yelling out in a mid-tennis match? You know it's poor etiquette. You're being a dickhead. Mm. Why are you yelling out, nice Gary, mid-serve? You're a twat, an absolute moron. Anybody who's saying nice Gary the cricket, spare me.
Yeah, you just know that it would be like a dare from somebody or someone talking to someone else on Facebook saying, oh, I'm about to do it. Watch Match Point. Mm. I'm about to yell at nice Gary. And, it'll be a viral YouTube clip and so on and so forth. It rolls on.
I don't know what my point is. It got me really upset. And, I was just trying to...
let's delve into it because you're talking about Australian identity. I mean, sure, is nice Gary the sort of 2016 evolution of Aussie, Aussie, Aussie? You know, just the really unimaginative catchphrases. It's like we can only handle one thing per decade that we can say together as a nation. And now it's nice Gary. So maybe it's standing for all of our lack of imagination.
I mean, there's a little bit of that. I think it's probably the closest to the evolution of Bowling Shane, of what our generation, probably the same generation, grew up with and saying. But the whole thing about nice Gary, it's so condescending to one of Australia's greatest ever bowlers. You know,
I thought you were going to say one of Australia's greatest ever midfielders for the Melbourne Demons. Yeah.
There's just so much just laden with it that just frustrates me. And then just some dickhead at the tennis yelling it out when Roger Federer is trying to play tennis. Match Point. Oh, really ground my gears, Sam.
Yeah. I mean, warning for a big word here, because it triggers a lot of people who listen to the show, but the juxtaposition between Federer, who is this high-end elite prince of in sporting history currently playing, and an Australian yelling out, probably with a flap hat on, nice Gary.
Totally, yeah.
It's embarrassing.
It is embarrassing. That's totally my point. Let's move on. We've given that way too much airtime. It's just something I had to get off my chest, and now you can send all your hate mail to me on Twitter. Should we speak about the AB medal? I mean, that's probably the biggest thing of the week. Let's talk about the AB medal. So David Warner is the greatest player that Australia's had this year.
Yeah.
I mean, it was surprising to me, Sam. What were your thoughts?
Well, I think particularly given our discussion about where the ODIs should rank in our podcast sequence, kind of goes to show that when it comes to the AB medal, it ranks quite a fair bit because really... Warner's been named our best cricketer of the year on the back of just some supreme one-day international and, to a lesser extent, T20 form in the test matches. And to be fair to him, he was actually quite quick to admit this on stage. He was disappointed with his test form until the back end of the year. But he was, I looked this up because I'm 31 and that's what I do. One half century from 9 innings away from home this year. At the point, I think the rest were less than that. For any test side whose credentials are basically built on how well you can do away from home, I was a little bit disappointed to see that the guy who's anointed our best cricketer of the year, is like the poster boy for struggling or for our struggles away from home. I mean, it just goes to show we're so besotted with the idea of our flat track bullies who can give him a bit of a whack. Mm-hmm. He's done great things this year, no doubt, Warner, but to be our best player, Smith scored a couple of hundreds overseas this year in New Zealand and Sri Lanka. Stark's been great all around. Warner can't help being selected, but what about our attitudes? What about our attitudes?
Well, it just says so much about the attitude, Sam, because here's the thing. So David has scored 2 test hundreds this year, and I would guess that they were in Australia on flat tracks, possibly in the second innings of matches. Or in dead rubbers. And as you say, it's not his fault. But then he averaged 39 in a year where Australia lost half of their test matches they played. They played 12 test matches. They lost 6 of those, which is not very good. Steve Smith averaged 69, I think. He averaged high 60. He's got 1,100 test match runs. But the waiting for the test matches should be... I understand that they're double. They're worth double the other things. But Davey smashes them.
Forgetting that major point that he whacks him and look at his kaboom. And I mean that in all senses.
I just think that it's just so obvious, the grade cricket attitude of but he might get you a quick 30. I mean, obviously, Warner hit 100.
He really takes the game away from you.
He can win a game
in a session. And he did against a deflated Pakistan side that were already beaten.
He did. But it's just that attitude where, Steve Smith, he ground out, some really good away hundreds, on a struggling side. But, Davey, what about, the SCG, when we're already up 2-0? You know, he smashed him that day. What about that pool shot he played? You know,
yeah,
just,
exactly.
Like those attitudes are just so deep that. But even the umpires and media are voting for it.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
It's just it seems ridiculous to me. But then saying that, you can't take away that he has absolutely smashed them in the one dayers. And so fair play to him. But for him to be Australia's best cricketer this year, hashtag not my AB medalist.
Exactly. And a shout out to Meg Lanning, Belinda Clark Medal and Domestic Player of the Year. She just dominates, as far as I understand.
Yeah.
I wanted to pick up on Hilton Cartwright.
Yeah.
As young player of the year, he goes. Yeah. I mean, not to get too, you know, bogged down in like actual cricket conversations. Sure. God forbid we do that on this show.
Why would we?
But I would have thought Matt Renshaw would be a pretty decent shout for young cricketer of the year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He scored 184. He's 20.
Yeah.
He made a debut with Australian cricket in crisis and steadied the ship somewhat.
Right.
Took a lot of really good catches. Hasn't dropped one. Has had good shield form as well. I'm just not sure what Cartwright's done that Renshaw hasn't.
I mean,
he did bowl four overs.
Yeah, and he hit a four of his first ball.
That's a good point. That was a good shot.
That was a good shot through cover.
Mm, so, that was a good shot.
I mean, you really can't.
He's got a good rig. He has a wonderful chest goal. We're just droning it out, aren't we? Got a good rig. Yeah.
I mean, it is surprising. I mean, Australia sort of found a guy who you'd think is going to play a lot of test matches for Australia. I mean, you would suspect, even just from his age, even if he might take a little bit of break from the side, which is what I think will probably happen. But we found a guy who could potentially play 100 test matches, but he's not the young player of the year. A guy who's played his last test match is... That's harsh.
I like that we're just picking up on topics that are at least 3 to 6 weeks old. Like we're talking about nice Gary, you know, David Warner's bat and Hilton Cartwright's selection.
Well, it's the end of the summer. I mean, one last thing on the Alan Border medal. Shane Watson was the international T20 international player of the year.
And I'm going to say, speaking of lexicon, is T20I. That's what you say now.
Oh, T20I.
Yeah.
Okay. You've I haven't caught it. Up.
That's all right.
I haven't caught up. But he's the international T20I player of the year.
Yeah.
And I think that's really interesting from a perspective where he's still in the Australian eye, just consider the failure.
Yeah.
Like, I would just love to interview him so much. I would just love to just talk to him because I'm a fan. I think he's been a really important cog in the Australian side for a number of years. I've said this on the podcast before, but like the fact that Australia is still trying to find a replacement for him speaks about how important he was into the team.
Mm.
I think this is going to get sort of forgotten because he's kind of retired and now he's just playing the T20s and stuff, the Big Bash and stuff. So I think it's awesome for him, but I just, unfortunately, his whole career is going to be dumbed down to the idiots on the internet.
He's been memeified to beyond whatever's real anymore. He's been parodied too much. I thought that like as Australia continues its search, its vain search for this number six that can bat and bowl, that history would be kind to Watson, but memes are just too powerful. memes beat history.
Yeah.
We've got an article coming out tomorrow or today, as most people listen to it, about club presentation nights. Is it fair to say that the Alan Border medal is really just a glorified club presentation night? You've got gaudy dress, you know, suits, guys with haircuts, guys in suits looking a bit too proud to be in a suit because they don't wear them very often. They're sort of beaming because they've got their dignity. They've had their hair done the afternoon and they're like, I actually look really good.
Yeah, I mean, there's sort of two differences. One is that it's on television, obviously, and then the second one is that players' partners are encouraged to go.
Yes. That's right. Players don't feel anxious about bringing their female in their lives.
Yeah.
Or partner.
Or partner. Yeah, I mean, statistically speaking, there's got to be someone out there. I mean, Sam, before you said that we don't speak about present issues, let's talk about the BBL.
Yeah, the ultimate present issue.
I don't care about the games.
Yes.
I don't care about
what's
happening.
You made that clear.
I want to talk about the match-fixing allegation.
Yeah.
Sam, for our international listeners who perhaps aren't across what's happening in that regard, can you please inform the listeners?
I'll try my best. A couple of days ago, there was a match between the Adelaide Strikers and the Sydney Thunder. And as we'd all be used to now, players, each team has a player mic'd up that speaks to the commentators to provide, you know, on-field entertainment and conversation.
Right.
In the course of a conversation between the anchor, the Channel 10 anchor, Mark Howard and Brad Hodge, Howard revealed to Hodge, the Adelaide Strikers captain, that Ben Lachlan has dismissed Shane Watson, who is the incoming batsman, twice in his last two fixtures they played with each other. Now, I might have bastardised that a little bit, but it was something along those lines.
He got him out twice and he'd only bowled like nine balls to him or something.
Right,
like
and to which Hodge replied, thanks for that stat, I'll bring him on. Mm. And it kind of called into question the integrity of this whole, and the fairness of Hodge receiving instructions from a television anchor while on field. You know, clearly it's unfair. It's manifestly unfair in the sense that the other team don't get similar statistics provided to them. Mm-hmm. It also raises broader issues about how real is the Big Bash when commentators have that level of access to players. Does the Big Bash even care? Does Cricket Australia even care? Is this truly just entertainment before sport? Here goes. What do you think?
Yes, I do. And I'm going to pick up some points that I said last week. I said last week that there's so much of the Big Bash which is just yuck. And I stand by that. And the number one most yuck thing is that you can talk to a professional athlete while he's playing. You don't speak to Usain Bolt when he's like on the blocks. You don't speak to a professional footballer when he's about to jump for a line out or a soccer player when he's taking a goal kick or a corner. You don't talk to professional athletes when they're on the field performing their duties as a professional athlete. It's so yuck, and it just shows automatically that you're just not taking the sport itself seriously. However, Sam, we were talking off air about how the Big Bash just isn't for us. It's not it's not for people who enjoy cricket. It's for a completely new audience. It's for young kids to get into the game. And from that perspective, it's been very successful because marketing-wise, it's a huge success.
That's right. Look, put your white privilege down, your white male privilege down. He goes, the Big Bash isn't made for you. You know, cricket isn't yours. You may sit in this dank room, and it's always dank. And then I think of Stephen Dank when I say that, but that's an aside.
Yeah.
You may sit in this, and read your dank memes in this dank room with your dank headphones on and your legs crossed and your arms over your head, and you may think, cricket's mine. Here I am in Fox Sports, you know, on the verge of taking over the cricketing world. But it's not. Mm. It's for kids. It's a disco, you know. It's to get them hooked into cricket. And it is. It's a first example of entertainment being more important than sports. It's completely unequal in that sense, but I don't think Cricket Australia cares because I think they have a ready-made generation of people, of kids, who want to follow cricket for the rest of their lives. And I think the tribalism of the commentators and stuff and the basic bias that they actually deliberately perpetuate is part of that.
I think this investigation into Mark Howard and what went down in that matter, I think is just a bit of a, I think they're just showing that they're trying to do something because obviously match fixing in the game has touched the game recently.
Yeah.
And it's been quite prominent in Australian media recently because Pakistan were here and we thought that we were all part of that situation. It's nice to see Muhammad Amir back and that kind of thing. I just think that
love the stereotypes.
I just think that speaking to a player, I mean, just on the field, it comes back to when Andrew Simons was playing in I think it was an international game, and he was bowling, and the commentators were talking to him then. And then there was that game where, the Australian cricket all-stars, when, Gilchrist played and McGrath played, and McGrath was bowling to the current Australian team, and he got Warner out, and he was, in his run-up, and he was like, I'm just going to nib this one away, and he got him out, and we all loved that.
Yeah.
But how often is it actually funny when you're speaking to a player on the field? How often are they actually funny? Or is that just we're just trying to work hard, you're just trying to bowl our fields. It's just you're just spreading the same message you do in a press conference, which is irrelevant.
It's just a, insidious influence of the media into the game. I mean, as every, media is dying and you're trying, here we are, Fox, just saying all this stuff. How bad are we to our employers? Apologies, the Fox, but it is. It is, and they're all looking for edges as to how you can bring people, people want to be part of everything, social media. Everyone thinks they're the story, so you want to be on the field with them. It raises so many issues. I mean, we like the Premier League football, he goes. Yep. Imagine playing Premier League and you can actually see on the digital screens around you on the sideboards what the odds are of you winning. depressing or deflating that would be if you're down 3-0? It's you're 30-1 to win. You know what I mean? There's things like that. And the other one I was going to say was, do you remember, this was years ago, Dean Jones got in trouble because there was a Victorian, under-23s match, I want to say. He was coaching, and he he created, an earpiece for one of his players
that
batting.
That sounds familiar, yeah.
And he was coaching the batter out there. So I just want to talk a bit about what it would be like just to be spoken to while you're playing.
By Dean Jones.
By Dean Jones or your dad. Yeah, anyone. Imagine
when are you
going
to move out?
When are you
get a job?
You play your shot off the back foot. What's he going to say? I just think you get across a little bit more there. Or I think there was one in that. Yeah. Or, pull him next time, champ.
Yeah.
See, I think, let's be positive about this. Google Glass, you just start getting statistics about people as you're opening.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, that's obviously the way of the future. I mean, I think Albion are going to create Google Glass. I think Albion are ahead of the game in terms of, Google Glass.
Exactly. And Albion Glass.
Albion Glass.
We come up with a more catchy name.
TM. Pez, Darren Lehman had a go at Kevin Peterson. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Darren Lehman seems to be very active on Twitter, and he seems very angry with a lot of people. And that to me speaks about someone who's not that comfortable in their current role, and I don't think he's going to be there in 2 years' time, is what I'm saying. I think his actions seem of someone who's very unsettled.
Well, he signed a 5-year contract recently, which many people raise their eyebrows at after recent results, which are pretty comparable to Mickey Arthur's before he went to India. So that aside, I think the background is that this morning Darren Lehman tweeted, following the Melbourne Stars' loss in a semi against the Scorchers, that Kevin Peterson's got to go. And he was pretty unequivocal in the way he said it.
Yep.
Said he doesn't score enough runs in big games.
Right.
There's been a pretty big response to that. Ballsy from Lehman in a purely political sense, given that KP is friends with Piers Morgan, who has a lot of followers. But, as we sort of prepped this show, we talked about those words from Lehman, the Australian coach, is the highest leadership position probably in the country next to the captain.
Yes.
Not being the words of a wise or judicious person. You know, it's quite kind of petty to deliberately, like, he wasn't responding to anything. He was just proactively starting lighting a fire, you know, under the trolls of Twitter. Mm. I'm sure it's in response to Peterson having his say about Australian selections, again, unequivocally over the last couple of weeks. But why does Lehman need to take on KP? I mean, the guy's so obvious to pick the kind of character he is. I just feel like Lehman stooped a bit there. I don't think it reflects on him well.
It feels really strange, doesn't it, in terms of you wouldn't see, I don't think you'd see an AFL coach doing this or like a rugby league coach or like, I mean, Premier League is a completely different thing because it's such huge exposure.
Yeah.
It's all very tightly managed and everything. But I just think that him even having control of his own Twitter, if he's going to do stuff like that, just seems really strange to me. But I think ultimately for me, my big takeaway from this is, again, just like the kind of people who are on television presenting the cricket to us from Australia. Mm. You know, there's just way too much. Isabel Westbury wrote something wonderful for The Raw, and I highly recommend that you seek that out. And it's just about the kind of people who are presenting the cricket to us, like, you know, Mark Taylor, Mark Waugh, all these guys that they just have such... They've got their fingers in so many pies in Australian cricket that there's just so much bias about what they're saying.
Yeah.
But then again, cricket's, the BBL isn't for us.
And all of that sort of stuff, I mean, what you're picking up there is with the commentators, they probably don't tell us what they actually think. And ordinarily you'd think, well, why don't you tell us what you actually think? But I think that, if I could say think anymore, perhaps producers just realise that we don't want to hear that. Maybe we do want that sportsman's lunch that Gus Wallen talked about a few years ago to Jeff Lemon. Maybe we do just want our heroes being parochial about players and just letting it wash over us while we pay our mortgage and feed our 2.5 kids. You know?
Maybe. I'm not sure. It's been quite an earnest chat so far. So we better get Richard Hines on the show.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Ryan Carters. The Grade Cricketers book was the first book that my partner and I ever read together. It was a bit of a challenging cricket season for me, and we'd stay up late, and she'd read me a chapter aloud each night before we fell asleep. I've heard of cricketers asking their girlfriends for throwdowns, but I decided to ask mine for literary throwdowns instead. Things have gone pretty well. We recently got engaged. So thanks so much, Great Cricketer guys. I'm eternally indebted to you.
Okay, here goes. Well, the man we're about to speak to is one of Australia's best sports writers. He's also a panellist on The Offsiders, which is probably the best sports panel show in Australia.
Probably.
Regardless of how above it Gideon Hay is. But he's also the person who made this podcast possible as well, and it's a huge pleasure to bring onto the show Richard Hines. Richard, hello.
Pleasure to be with you guys.
Very good. We always start the same way, Richard, because we're unimaginative, unlike you. No, because it's the appropriate place to start. What is your relationship to club or grade cricket?
My relationship is very rocky. I guess I started off in the era where no one got a prize. I was in the era where, I was the pre, you didn't just turn up and get a participation certificate, which became tricky for me because I love sport and I was terrible at it. So what I found fairly early on was you have to find your place.
Right.
And I found my place was at the non-strikers end. I went to Warwick Nabeel Primary, which is a little dot on the landscape out in the Wimmera, which is the wheat belt of Victoria. Population 3,000, but we managed to cobble together a team. And we had a kid called Gutsy Heavener, who was the Dave Warner of Warwick Nabeel of his day. Gutsy could hit a ball a mile, which was, you know, seasonally adjusted just to just enough to get over the under 12 boundaries of the day. My earliest recollection of my cricket career is making three in a 100 partnership with Gutsy Heavener. And from that, I sort of worked out that my role in life was to, you know, get in, alternate the strike by moving down the other end after I'd played six dot balls, and get Gutsy on strike and watch his magnificence while holding up an end. And that became the genesis of what later became Real Openers. So it was a very early awakening for me as a cricketer.
It's funny you say that, Richard, because I was about to say, we're all sort of familiar with Twitter phenomenons here on this call. You know, obviously this year over in America we've had hashtag Mugger, Make America Great Again, sadly. And but in Australia we've had a phenomenon started by you called hashtag Real Openers. Can you run us a little bit through that? I think you've given us the kind of etymology of the story there, but what's it about? What's Real Openers? Shouldn't you just be whacking it?
Well, a Real Opener, to me, it's the genesis. I've given you the genesis. Yeah. It's my own experience. And like I said, in my day, everyone gets a prize, primary school, your turn-up certificate. So I've kind of turned what was considered, the slog work of the day into an achievement. And I loved it. I mean, I grew up as, like most Australian kids in the mid-1970s, I grew up loving Jeff Boycott. So, you know, that's where I came from. You know, I remember the first test match I went to in Melbourne. We did the four-hour drive from Warwick-Nabil up to watch the brilliant 78-79 Australians take on England, being 4-0 down at the time. Jeff Hogg steams in at the MCG with a crowd of about 50,000 there and bowls Jeff Boycott. The crowd goes up, everyone screams. I was in tears and wanted to go home. I'd come to watch a boycott. Apparently, all these other people wanted to watch Australia win a game, which they eventually did in the land, to bravely go down 4-1 in the series. But so that's the genesis of it. I guess it's recognising the role of the guy who digs in and does his job and holds up an end and, you know, recognises that balls faced are as valuable as runs scored.
Richard, I want to ask you, because I'm thinking about starting my own hashtag, because, you know, because you need permission to start hashtags on the internet. That's how you've got to register them first. But I'm thinking about starting mine, and it's hashtag not my AB medalist. And I want to ask you about, I mean, did Gussie win all the awards back in the day because he just whacked them, whereas you were doing the Steve Smith role at the other end, just really scoring hard away runs?
No one cared about cricket in Warwick. Gutsy won all the awards because he was a champion for the local football
team. Right,
he probably do 17 bales in a minute. Out in the tractor. But no, he won all the awards and I, of course, went along for the ride. But I actually, you know, the term wingman hadn't been created at the time, but that's how I considered myself. You know, there was something really nice about coming off the ground, seven not out, when Gutsy had made 132 and we'd knocked off the opposition total without losing a wicket. Yeah. So I sort of, but I'm actually here. Have you had anyone on the show yet who's not promoting a book or a hashtag?
No, absolutely not. You've got to be promoting something. Yeah.
Well, I'm here tonight. Real Openers is my old gig. I'm here for my new campaign, which is hashtag hack my cricket.
Okay.
I'm calling upon the Russian government to hack the My Cricket Rush, the website, immediately and bring it down, because I think it's caused an absolute disruption in the culture of Australian cricket. And the reason for this is that, as an old person, I was able, in my day, to go into a bar at any Australian pub and lie flagrantly about my average. In fact, the 13 not out I made in the semi-final for Middle Park in the Mercantile C-grade grand semi-final in 1989 has now become 132.
Yeah. Hang on, let me just get that up on my cricket.
This is the point. As an older age gentleman, no one was able to then pull out a smartphone, produce the My Cricket website, and then debunk my myth.
Mm.
Whereas now what's happening is we've got kids growing up in an age where they can't lie about their average, the runs scored, without some smartass pulling out a phone and debunking their myths. So I think this, I don't use the term lightly and I don't use it often, but I think this is un-Australian, what my cricket is doing to the lies of local cricketers.
Well, so, on behalf of the great cricketer. Yeah, on behalf of the great cricketer. We fully welcome that, because not only is it important that you're able to lie about your average, but if you're not, that ruins about three quarters of our jokes as well. So
I would love nothing more than tomorrow morning we wake up and China's, you know, organise a distribution denial of service attack, much the way they did on the Australian consensus. I'd love that. Yeah. My cricket just crashed.
I think lying will always survive, though. But I was just going to say, Richard, picking up on, you know, your love of Jeff Boycott and stuff, we tend to like the players that we can see ourselves in.
Yep.
And you were talking about the important role of the wingman in cricket in times gone by. But do you think Australian cricket these days produces wingmen? I mean, do you see anybody going around today that fits the real opener's mould or the sort of player that you would have liked growing up?
God, that's possibly one of the worst setups. I mean, I've watched Rose McManus, and really, I mean, I know you have researchers and you have guys heading to that, but you know, you could have just said Renshaw out loud. You could have covered your tracks a little bit.
Oh, I hadn't thought of him. Yeah, yeah.
No,
what are your thoughts on him?
Renshaw, that's a good idea.
Look, I've watched him bat. I was over in Adelaide, and you know, some people had the background of Ian Chappell complaining about his run rate. I had violins playing from the moment. What were those people thinking? I mean, for Channel 9 commentators, having watched half a summer of Australia capitulate to what I thought was fair to middle-grade South African bowling, we have a guy out there putting his heart and soul, a 20-year-old, and making it even better from England, just to tease them and taunt them, Ashes summer, doing what he did. I mean, it was a rhapsody in pads, as far as I'm concerned. So I love him, and I don't know. I think, what did you guys think, actually, you know, I'll ask you a question. What did you guys think when Darren Lehman hinted that he might not open in England? I drove to the Westgate Bridge personally. What was your response to that?
I turned to Richard Hines on Twitter and just read your responses to it, actually. We were going to talk a little bit beyond this about, you know, champ and alpha culture in Australian cricket. But clearly, you know, Renshaw, I think one of the main things with Renshaw that I've bristled at is Lehman suggesting that despite his, you know, the copious amount of runs that he's scoring, that he's got to still learn to do it more quickly. Just let him play.
Exactly. That's the time.
Yeah.
I think pressure.
I actually cultivated that in 40-over game. But I think, you know, I think that's the time is, you know, a motto we should all live by.
Yes.
Nothing more satisfying than batting in a 40-over game and finishing on 23 not out.
I say it to my wife constantly. You haven't cleaned the bathroom, you've been home working in your underwear all week. Sweetheart, that's the time.
Richard,
it doesn't actually mean anything, but, you know.
Really paints a picture.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to ask you that, Richard. Is he going to play, though? I mean, like, part of me thinks that it might be better off for everyone in Australia if they play Sean Marsh opening the batting and we just end his career in India, because he averages about 0.7.
Can we rewind the tape?
Yeah.
You just said it might be better for everyone if we bat Sean Marsh. Can we check that? I'm fairly sure that, you know, there might be an alternate fact on this. There could be an alternative fact, but I'm pretty sure you did say that.
All I know is that Mitch Marsh is going to come good in India, and he's going to average 80 with the bat and 15 with the ball.
Following 145 Ks. Yeah.
I'm doing Hail Marys here, but I actually, you know, Mitch Marsh at six, I'm not totally, and I'm regretting this, but it might not be the worst thing, but, you know, Renshaw. Seriously, he
plays. I want to get your take, Richard, on speaking of Twitter firestorms and phenomenons. Overnight, our champion of champs, Darren Lehman, came out and said that KP had to go. And it's just, talk about alpha showdowns on Twitter. It doesn't get more mouth-watering than that. You know, do you have a view on Lehman's actions and, I guess, the content of what he said?
Does he have the White House account yet? You know how Trump now has two accounts?
At POTUS,
like he's got his own account and POTUS.
Yeah.
Maybe Lehman should get the cricket Australia account as well. Do you get that for that one? Like, I find it very hard. You know, when you've got two people who you've kind of have, I don't have a dubious opinion of Darren Lehman, but two people who you wonder if they should be tweeting kind of beyond, what do you call it, a circuit?
Yes. Yeah. I think so.
Can I ask you that? This is my other thing. I actually, you know, I was proud to give my endorsement to your book. The one term I don't understand is circuit. Can you explain it to me?
Well, I think it's kind of derived from a Formula One circuit or a tennis circuit, but it's kind of applied to where you go to socialise. So you're out on the circuit.
Okay. It's like the ATP circuit.
Okay. So, yeah, we don't have it in club cricket. Having not reached the grade, we just had a pub crawl.
Yeah,
right. So is it the same thing?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
You need to equate it to something professional to feel good about yourself.
Yeah.
So should you be tweeting? At what stage of the circuit should you tweet?
I don't think there's a really good answer for that. Yeah. I feel like
never and always.
That's the only thing, and look, you know, with high respect to what Darren's doing for Australian cricket, that was the only question that might have come to mind.
I see.
Last night reading that tweet. Mm.
I feel like with the word circuit, if you say, oh, I'm going on the circuit, it makes you feel like you're actually doing something with your life other than just drinking alcohol with 10 other blokes that you hate.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the origin of the circuit. Okay.
And the whole meaning of Lehman's tweet might have changed if there was a hashtag that we could start now just called circuit tweets.
Yeah.
Oh, he was circuit tweeting. It's okay.
You know circuit tweeting. I like that.
Yeah, no. Doesn't count.
Rich, in your profession, you would have met many professional cricketers and semi-professional cricketers over the years, but your boyhood hero, Jeff Boycott, you came across him one day.
I did. Look, you know when you build yourself up and there's a moment, you know, you've
never met your heroes.
Prepared yourself and occasionally, but you prepare yourself. And it came to me on the 2013 Ashes tour where, you know, Australia weren't faring well, but, you know, that sort of the recovery was on its way.
Yeah.
I've got into a lift at Old Trafford. And the man himself is there, Jeff Boycott. Hmm. And I've beheld him in all his sort of, you know, Grecian 2000 glory, looked at him. And I thought, I wonder, you know, you've wondered all your life what the conversation would go like, what it'd be like. And the conversation I had with Jeff Boycott was free. I got into the elevator, said, good morning, Sir Jeffrey, good day. And he said, free. And I pushed the button. And we went up to level 3. And I'll always have that.
No one can take that away from you.
No, we'll always have 3, which is where we've gone. But there was a kind of a disappointing corollary to this whole conversation in that I was a staunchly Boycott man because obviously, you know, he knew all the rules of the real openers that I've since, you know, educated the public on in my, you know, I like to think. You know, you never suffer a run out, but your partner might, you know, all the usual ones. And I got up to my seat that very day. I got up to my seat in the press box, and they, as you guys might know, they have little name tags there. Mm-hmm. I sat down, and the name tag next to me was Mike Brearley.
Ah.
And I thought, boyhood nemesis. No, I'm a Boycott man here. Boycott real openers. And I'm sitting next to Mike Brearley, the patrician villain of my childhood days. You know,
is it like a Clark Kadich thing?
Yeah, well, no, it's kind of more like a... I can't think. There's no real comparison because they were both
so it's exactly
in
the same
different
as Clark
ways Kadich. Opening batsmen.
Yep.
Yeah.
Really just had that sort of patrician, pasty-faced English villain.
Yeah.
You know, 80 Headingley, you know.
Yeah.
Both of them still should have been captain there. You know, we win the Ashes.
Yeah.
So I sit down next to Mike Brearley, prepared to hate him in every way. So I was going to, you know, give him my real, you know, blue steel for all 5 days. Turns out to be the loveliest guy you will ever meet. He was just fantastic. Like, and his stories were absolutely atrocious. You know, his stories about, you know, visiting the Australian embassy. He was so self-deprecating about the whole tours and what he'd suffered, his own batting, you know, his deficiencies. You know, he was just lovely. Every journalist who came up to him, he'd give them a quote for their stories, you know. So it's, you know, So, of course, it made me hate him even more.
Natural response.
Yeah, because, you know, not once, I sat next to him 5 days, we spoke constantly and whatever, not once did he say three to me.
Richard, an absolute pleasure having you on The Grey Cricketer. We really appreciate it. And just taking a chance again to thank you while you're on the phone for making all of this actually possible. We sit in this dank room in Fox Sports. It wouldn't have happened had you not seeded the idea with us.
Our first champion.
That's right.
I wouldn't have done it if I'd known you weren't going to have a superior class of guests. So you need to improve that. Otherwise...
Thank you very much. We'll speak to you next time, Richard. Cheers.
This summer, we've got the biggest renovation challenge yet. Two teams will have to transform not one, but two broken down grade cricket dressing rooms every single week. There will be tension.
What even is grade cricket, Dazza? Why do we take time off work to do this?
Come on, Charlesy. Work hard, love.
There will be drama.
I just want to make this perfect. Grade cricket deserves a great home.
But when the reveal comes, there will be joy.
Oh God. Lads. Boys. Look at this, right? Results. Results.
Ever since the missus booted me out and took the kids, I've been sleeping in this dressing room. It's a second home to me, literally. So this is really special.
For us to be able to come in and give these grade cricketers a beautiful new dressing room, one they can drink their beers in, sing the club song, judge each other in the showers, yeah, you know, it makes you feel good.
But this ain't no charity. Not when the stakes are this high.
I'm not here for a bloody holiday. If I wanted that, I would have gone to Bali or Thailand.
It's Australia's toughest renovation competition. Winner takes all.
If I have to dish out a little bit of chin music, I will.
Presented by Australia's favourite knockabout blue-collared larrikin millionaire.
We're giving great cricket the reno makeover it deserves.
Reno Rampage. Coming soon.
An esteemed Australian journalist, sports writer, and very funny person, Richard Hines. Awesome to have him on. It's that time, Ian. It's time for Ask TGC. I want to say hashtag Ask TGC. Thanks for everyone for using that. It feels really technical and professional. We all know.
It makes it a lot easier for us to find the questions, to be honest, because you can imagine we get more than 7 notifications a week.
Yeah. It's really difficult for us, obviously, yeah, dealing with this internet fame, as you can see. The first one comes from John Fetchy. There's quite a few this week. Some of them are longer than others. We'll see what we can get through. But this one's a short one. I like it. John Fetchy says, which gave birth to alphadom, the Aussie test sides of the 80s or 90s or grade cricket?
Really interesting question, John.
I
think that I like to think that it started in the test arena. I think they sat down at a team meeting and they go, right, we're going to verbally disintegrate these players. And then people saw it on the television and there was exposure for it and they brought it into the lower levels of cricket. Saying that, everyone started from the bottom. Mm. So maybe these, I'm not sure. Chicken and egg.
Well, there's a few things I want to pick up from this. Firstly, I like the binary question of like, it has to be one or the other. It can't be both. Yeah. Secondly, I like that this whole like male construct of alphadom had to have come from our cricket sides. Like, I would have thought it would come from like winning World War One.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, like, I just think the arrogance it would have come from winning the Great War. And it was a devastating war. But winning that might have given birth to that kind of muscular Christian person who kind of dominated everyone based on rigs.
Yeah, I mean, World War One was as much, you know, Battle of Attrition, I'm thinking.
Well, that's
Battle
true.
Of the Somme, and whereas, you know, later wars, you know, Vietnam, we just bombed them.
Yeah, okay. Jesus Christ. Sorry to our septuagenarian listeners out there. Anyway, I guess it's probably more than those two eras. If I had to say at a stretch, I'm going to say 80s or 90s.
Okay.
Okay.
Second question from Jack Hewitt. Is that my pronouncing that?
Yeah, longish one.
He says, "G'day, boys. I have a query about preferred cricketing attire. My apologies for reading that incorrectly. I am a wicketkeeper who plays third grade at best. I have always worn short sleeves and for the last 5 years or so, a bucket hat in team colours with $2 Ray-Ban sunglasses straight from Bali. I'm not sure if I want to go on.
Yeah.
This is disgusting. I've somehow in my lifetime missed the fact that keepers should always wear long sleeves. And in hindsight, This makes sense, as I would have avoided some unfortunate tan lines on my forearms. In light of Sam Gotch, being chastised on national television by Gilly and Co. in commentary, I'm wondering if I should follow suit, dig in and continue with my regular kit, or bite the bullet and get a long sleeve shirt. Thanks for your help. P.S. My dad was a keeper, and I'm pretty sure he never mentioned the long sleeves rule purely to alpha me.
I like the idea that a dad has sort of like preconceived ideas about what he's going to alpha his son on.
Yeah,
I think I'll alpha him on this.
What do you want, a boy or a girl? Oh, I want a son, and I'm going to alpha him.
Do you notice beta coming into the conversation?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Like
yeah.
Someone wrote in recently, it was Harry Bede, friend of the show, wrote in and said, like, is there anything more beta than getting a nickname with just the first and second, your initials of your first and second name?
Yeah.
More beta, it's more beta nickname.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So, I mean, I guess it is sneaking. I mean, this question of Jax is really simple.
Yeah, let's stick with that one.
Yes. Get a long sleeve shirt, idiot. Why are you wearing a short sleeve shirt with a bucket hat and $2? I'm not sure if you're taking the piss.
I've got an earnest question, though, because he says, in hindsight, this makes sense, as I would have avoided some unfortunate tan lines on my forearms. Is that why keepers wear long sleeves? Because surely that logic would apply to everyone on the field.
That's not why.
He's still not getting it, Jack. Yeah. It's like, you just wear it because you look yuck with short sleeves and flappy duck-like hands as keeper gloves.
Like, imagine if Roger Federer had his hat back to front. It wouldn't look right. He looks silky smooth like a gazelle.
Yeah.
And the reason that you wear... I mean, ultimately, the reason why you wear long sleeve shirts as a wicketkeeper is because the gloves come up to about mid-forearm.
Yeah.
So it looks like you're wearing three-quarter pants.
So it's the equivalent of wearing three-quarter pant keppers.
Corduroys.
Yeah. I thought it was... It's kind of like putting your leathers on as a motorbike rider, like, because if you come off, you want to have good stuff to roll with. Like, long sleeve shirt is good for that, for keeping, because you can roll and
that's
not scrape your arm.
Dave
Cornford writes in, he says, when an 18-year-old ex-Greenies player finally sobers up enough from schoolies to bring his perfect rig along to training, then knocks over the captain in the nets and gets fast-tracked into twos. It's a comment. It's just a straight comment.
Yeah, and for those who don't know what Greenies is, that's Green Shields under 16 competition here in Sydney. So when an 18-year-old ex-under-16 representative player finally sobers up enough from schoolies, and then he's got a good rig, and I'm not sure what the comment is. I'm not sure what the point is. Does he want us to post that?
Oh, I just think he's giving us another standard kind of grade situation. It might have been one of those questions that come in that people want us to tweet.
The amount of people, especially on Facebook, who write private messages thinking that they've got the funniest idea ever, and it's rubbish. And we're never going to use what you've said. We're never going to use what you've said. You're not funny.
We're getting a bit above our fans here, aren't we? Like, we're going to slap us down.
Mate,
slap
fans,
us down.
Pathetic losers.
Mike Skinner from The Streets. Great first album because he was from The Streets. The second one was about being famous and no one bought it. Greg Curtis, though, speaking of friends, though, I'm not going to read out his full message, but it's a message of thanks to us. He's from the Gators in Brisbane.
Gators.
Those who know the podcast well will recall when we basically alphaed the shit out of Greg when he rode in and we...
Accidentally.
It was an accidental alpha, but is it ever accidental? And we thought that he was talking about a grade club. We thought he was talking about a park club when he was talking about a grade club. Anyway, he rode in and they've won their KFC 2020 first grade final. So decent side, I'd imagine. And he said, Captain Corey Barsby, club chop king and son of Queensland legend Trevor, was glowing in the support that TGC had given the club in his humble victory speech. I wouldn't mind a transcript of that speech. Yeah. So thanks for the plug on the TGC podcast, as the crowd was the biggest ever seen at the Gator Dome in living memory. Greg Curtis. I also like the name of that club because it sounds like a kind of NFL franchise.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. It also reminds me of the Waterboy for some reason. But Greg needs to get in touch with us, because if TJC was mentioned in the captain's victory speech, we need to speak to him in terms of royalties. Paddy
Alfring fans again.
Paddy Fagan writes in, hi TGC. Firstly, I'm a 6th grade single 28-year-old terrible cricketer with a sloppy rig, averaging 20-odd, who drives over an hour each way to play at the club where I played juniors because all my mates still play first there and I like to hang around them. That's the best sentence ever and so vulnerable. Marry me, Paddy.
It's like an RSVP status. Carry on.
It's a Tinder profile. Anyway, it's come to my attention lately that you three call the club rooms the clubhouse. My housemate played a season with me who also called it the clubhouse and was laughed off the field by the entire team, scored a diamond duck in a grand final, and has never played again.
Hell of an image, literally being laughed off the field by an entire team.
Really daunting, yeah. I always thought he was the only one confused with the golf clubhouse and the cricket club rooms until recently listening to you. Have I been wrong my whole life? Point and discussion. Let's get back to the rooms for a beer works so much better than let's get back to the house for a beer.
Okay. First things first, Paddy, I just was completely unaware that we were saying clubhouse because that's not a thing that you say. And I'm really appreciative that, Paddy, you've picked up on lexicon because you cannot get words wrong in cricket. 10 years hard work spot getting on every word right, politically and socially working your way up the feudal system of grade cricket. One stray word like clubhouse will send you hurtling down the greatest snake on the game of snakes and ladders that is grade cricket. So it's an awareness message from you, Paddy, more than anything else. I didn't know we were saying clubhouse at all. So
I wasn't aware of that.
Apologies. Let's just blame Dave.
Oh, Dave.
He's not here.
Dave, it must be a Singapore thing.
Yeah. Let's get back to the rooms. Clubhouse, it's not a thing. That's not a thing. Denouncing it immediately.
Lockie McKenzie writes in.
Sorry, can I just say this? Sorry. This is just one I want to include. This is another example of the messages we get. Lockie McKenzie, just while the ODI was on. Hi, are you at the SCG? That's it. Like, we weren't. But I'd like to know what would have happened. I mean, maybe I'm being rude again. He just maybe wanted to catch up.
Well, I think what's happened is because our profile picture still says live at the SCG. So that's what's happened.
Bad, okay. Fair enough.
Pete E. Charles writes in and he says, hi, guys. I'd like to know what your thoughts are on Cricket Australia hiring Monty Panesar as spin bowling consultant ahead of the Aussie Tour of India. Upon hearing the news, I had to laugh as the last time I heard Monty's name mentioned was when he was urinating on bouncers outside a dodgy nightclub in Brighton. Also, can I give a quick shout-out to my mate Michael Curry? Me and Big Kev miss him, and London isn't the same without him. Come back to London, Michael. Come back. Thanks, guys. Keep up the great work. Hashtag AskTGC. What are our thoughts on Monty Panesar? Yeah, it's a strange choice. He's playing great cricket for Campbelltown here in Sydney.
Oh, why not? I think a lot of those things get beat up a lot more than they actually are. He did really well against India a couple of years ago, so I'm sure he'd have like half an idea. He's in Australia, and I think they just go, well, Monty, if there's anything you can tell us that would help, we'll give you some money in exchange for that information.
Yeah, I don't think he's sitting down and giving hour-long PowerPoints.
Yeah, exactly.
Or is he?
I like him. There's a really good piece. I think it was a really good piece that came out in The Guardian about Monty Panesar recently. I'm going to say it's from Will McPherson. I'm going to just take that gambit. And it was
Will Mac.
Really cool to read about Monty Panesar and some of his struggles that he's come through to sort of be the person he is. He wants to have another shot at international cricket. And he was an enigma when he played. I thought he was a great bowler. Yeah. So all the best to Monty. I didn't know much about urinating on bouncers outside a dodgy nightclub in Brighton, though. But, you know, who hasn't?
Yeah, I did that this morning. That was the thing that it was in the press last week. I think the Daily Mail picked it up.
Okay.
So, you know, huge if true.
Ben Matthews?
Last question.
Yep. There's two.
Sorry,
that's okay. It's okay. Hey, guys, this is Ben Matthews. Hey, guys, love the show. I understand that because I play amateur cricket in England, I am village compared to the grade level in Australia. That's a great little opener. But my question is this. This preseason, I attempted to dethrone the captain at my club in an attempt to become the captain myself. I was unsuccessful in my attempt and have made the wise choice in leaving the club. I am unsure about how to act around my new teammates. Do I continue to be my quiet, introvert self? They are unaware of my unsuccessful attempt at my previous club. If not, what do you recommend? Secondly, how do I approach the post-game shower situation? Thanks, Ben Rubik's Matthews. Rubik's inverted
okay,
commas.
So the shower situation's got nothing to do with what you've tried to do at your former club, but how do you approach it?
Yeah. I think he needs to go to a psychiatrist. Firstly, just the idea that, like, which person do I be? Which person should I be? Just be yourself, man.
Yes, but just, if he hasn't got a good rig, then what's the point? So I understand his question there.
But what's going to happen if he turns up and he like puts on a particular personality, presuming he's got three or four to pick from, but he's playing the role for so long, he's eventually going to snap, isn't he? It's going to become toxic, and then he's just, you know, if he's the introvert, he's going to have a massive blowout on the field.
The good thing is about his situation about trying to overthrow the previous club captain is that that's not on the internet. So if he'd lied about being, you know, a batting all-rounder, bats four, bolt some leg spin, did quite a lot of overs, and they just go, oh, I'll Google your name. Oh, you've actually never played cricket before, and you've got six warrants outstanding. Why would that come up? But yeah, then that's a different situation. But because he's trying to overthrow, and he's played that quite well. I forget what his question is. Chub up in the showers.
My answer to everything is a default. I'm not sure what to say in a job interview. The club off-spinner writes in, is on Twitter, at Grade Cricketer. Is there any better feeling than being dropped, winning, and watching the higher grade lose? Oh. We haven't picked up on this. I think it's a really good insight.
Oh, well, the winning doesn't matter. Like, the winning, like, you playing in a winning side doesn't matter at all.
Mm-hmm.
If he's got dropped and he's scored runs.
Yeah, okay.
So if he's dropped and he scores 60, and by 60 I mean 37.
Yep.
Then the high team. I mean, that's a great weekend because then you can go, you guys need me. You need me, don't you? I had some runs in me this weekend. What did you do? You dropped me.
I think what the club off spinner is getting at is, and you will have experienced this, Higos, is that smug satisfaction when you rock up to first grade as a team, maybe beer in hand because you've won early and they've lost, you know, and let's say you've performed well and you've been dropped the previous week and you've got your sort of heart, you've got your stubby of VB, you're wearing some tattered Haviana thongs, you've already got your tan, and you're wearing your club training gear and you kind of cock a hoop three cricket beers in, so you're basically drunk.
Yes.
And first grade are losing. That's a pretty good feeling.
Yes, and you also get the opportunity to ask everyone, oh, how did you go? Hoping for the reciprocal question, oh, how did you get on?
Yeah.
Because that person hasn't, obviously you would never ask anybody in any situation, if you know they've done well, never ask that person how they went. Only ask them how they went if you know that they've failed.
Speaking of how have we gotten on, it's the end of the show. I think we've done pretty well. An announcement as we conclude the show. Next week will be our last show for the series. Been very grateful to be with Fox Sports for this time. It's just time to finish it up, basically. Everyone wants to finish playing cricket about this time of year, and that's what we're doing.
Please, no more finals.
Because we can. Fox Sports were desperate to have us, I'm fairly certain. But we're going to do everything possible to make it a cracker. If there's any guests that you want on, let us know. Yeah. No guarantees on any of it. But just let us know to talk to us because we want to be spoken to.
Yeah.
But next week's our last week, so we're going to make it a big one. Dave will be back, and we'll catch you then.